Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
Food and travel. They go hand in hand. And chances are, if you're a fan of Heritage Radio Network, you love them both. Between April 10th and 24th, we have six incredible food and travel experiences up for auction at charitybuzz.com. Go on an underground food tour of New Orleans with a rocket scientist. Get your hands on VIP passes to Feast Portland, or enjoy a ranch-to-table experience in wine country. Four of the experiences include hotel stays at some of the most iconic properties across the country, including the newly reopened Hotel Claremont in Atlanta. Now's your chance to win the ultimate Bourbon and Beyond weekend in Lexington, or take in a Latin food tour of New York's outer boroughs. You'll eat, drink, explore, and relax, all while supporting Heritage Radio Network. Help us keep the lights on and the mics hot. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/auction and bid now.
Hello, this is Dana Cowan, your host, and you are listening to Speaking Broadly on Heritage Radio Network. Today, my guest is someone who has overcome a challenging illness and also some challenging shyness. She has built not just one, but two businesses with her four siblings and parents. And she is the chief innovation officer for a growing empire called Siete Family Foods. I'm very excited to have Veronica Garza on my show, calling in from Austin, Texas. Veronica, so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be chatting with you.
you're kind of happy to be chatting with me. You're also like, I'm glad I said yes, but I'm not so sure. So
I'll feel better once it's over.
I'm going to try to make it, you know, as joyful as it can be. You come from a large Mexican-American family, and you were born in Laredo, Texas, and you grew up eating classic Mexican food, from what I can tell, which includes, you know, great flour and corn tortillas. But your business is built on an almond tortilla. Can you tell me, like, what was the health situation that made you look into a grain-free diet and then grain-free tortillas?
Yeah, so we're Siete Family Foods, a grain-free, healthy Mexican-American food brand. We got started in 2014, but really the idea came about in 2010. So as you mentioned before, I've dealt with a lot of health issues. I was diagnosed with multiple autoimmune conditions since I was 17 years old, so you know, almost half my life ago. And I was dealing with a lot of autoimmune symptoms for many years. And
so, can we talk about what those are? Like, what are the autoimmune symptoms? Like, how does that affect your everyday life?
Sure. So I have three different conditions I've been diagnosed with. One is called ITP, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, I think is the full name for that. And it's basically just low platelet counts that are caused by some sort of immune response. And then I have lupus as well and Hashimoto's. So the symptoms vary. And I deal with different symptoms from the different conditions at different times in my life, but so the low platelet counts, and then years later, I think when I was about 22, I was diagnosed with lupus, and a lot of those symptoms were just, you know, like achy joints, just feeling really fatigued all the time and couldn't figure out why, just general inflammation. And then for me, it specifically started affecting my kidneys. I remember a doctor telling me at the time that if I didn't improve, that I would have to, you know, go on dialysis pretty quickly. And that was pretty scary at the moment.
Honestly, it all sounds a little scary. Was that incredibly overwhelming and you just wanted to shut it all down and go crawl into bed? Or?
It was, and it actually did affect my life at that moment. I was, I had a job at the University of Texas right after I had graduated from college, and I had to leave that job because it did become so overwhelming, just all of the doctor's appointments and just feeling like it was hard to get out of bed in the morning, and it was kind of hard to hold down a job. So I left that job and moved back to Laredo for a period to go live with my parents so that they could support me during that time. So it was, life-changing experiencing that.
But then I know that your family was so supportive, and I remember there was something about working out in the backyard. I was like, this is a family that committed to help you through your health challenges together,
yeah.
Right? It wasn't like, you're on your own, like, we'll be there for you, but they were with you.
Yeah, my parents and everybody in my family was always really concerned for me, and they tried to help in any way they could. It wasn't until, I think it was 2008 or 2009, I had just graduated from grad school, I'd gotten my MBA, and I was home for a summer trying to figure out, what I was going to do with my life, what I was going to do with this degree. And it was around that time that my older brother had been doing a lot of research. He had become familiar with, the paleo diet and CrossFit, and he was reading a lot of people were saying, just anecdotally, that, they felt a lot better when following a grain-free diet. If they were dealing with different autoimmune conditions, it tended to help most of these people to alleviate a lot of these symptoms. So he suggested that I start doing that. And with a little bit of resistance at first,
Was that because you just didn't believe that anything could actually help you?
Yeah, I had been, no doctor had ever told me that, my diet could be helpful. They just wanted to put me on medication, so it didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I ate healthy at the time.
Right.
But it wasn't healthy for, the different conditions that I was dealing with. So I did change my diet at that point. And what made it a lot easier for me to do was my family, everybody in my family, all seven of us, changed our diet at the same time. They did it to support me. They know my personality, and they knew that I probably wasn't going to do it unless, I had people doing it with me. So,
and why was that? Why would you not have done it on your own?
It's really difficult to do. And I guess if you're getting together on a regular basis for people, to come together for a meal, if you're that one person,
oh yeah, of course, you're right, sure.
Eating, differently, you just don't. There's resistance.
That makes.
I want to be like everybody else.
Of course, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I just love that all seven of you did it together. That must have made it actually kind of fun, right?
Yeah, it changed a lot of things. We had to get really creative in the kitchen, and my mom started cooking differently, and even my dad, who's a really picky eater, joined us in that, and he changed his diet, and everybody started feeling better. And it was also around that same time that, like you mentioned, we started working out together in my parents' backyard, and that eventually led to a business in itself. Their friends and neighbors started catching on to what we were doing, and they wanted to join us. So there ended up, I think, being 20 people in my parents' backyard.
Oh my God.
It got so big.
Wow.
We realized we had to, for the neighbor's sake, we had to move it to an actual location and, start recruiting new members and actually have people pay to participate in these workouts with us. So that was our first business venture together.
And what did you discover in working together? Because I find it actually impossible, would not be too strong a word. I find it impossible to think about creating a business with, my siblings. What was that like? Were you worried? Did everybody naturally fall into place and everyone knew their role?
Yeah, I think it was just natural. I don't think there was ever really a discussion of, like, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. It was just, these are the things that need to happen, and the person who felt most capable or comfortable doing those things did them. So we all still had, you know, full-time jobs elsewhere, so it was sort of an evening thing and weekend business. And eventually, actually, we did have my older brother move down to Laredo from Houston, where he was living with his family, to manage our business full-time. It was really natural. I think we were just so used to doing things together. It didn't feel like a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way you describe it. It sounds almost idealized, right? Because everybody, without the fighting and like, I want to do that. No, I want to do that. Or I don't want to do anything, which I guess is another option. So I'm curious, because I haven't heard anything about like a love of cooking on your part or food. And yet you developed the original almond flour tortilla recipe, right? Experimenting. How did that happen?
So I would say it was definitely innovation that came out of necessity. I do really enjoy cooking, but I don't have any professional background in it. It's just something I've always been, you know, enjoyed doing. I guess I would consider myself kind of a tinker in the kitchen, always trying to do things a little differently. So when we all changed our diet, you know, we all started feeling really good, but we definitely felt like there was a part of our culture that we were missing out on. We would regularly get together on weekends for a carne asada, is what we would call it. It's a backyard barbecue where we grill a ton of meats. We no longer were able to wrap, you know, the delicious fajitas in a tortilla. We would have to grab like a piece of lettuce and call that a taco, and it just wasn't the same thing.
That didn't feel so good.
Yeah, no, and then you go to, you know, get togethers with friends and you're that weird person that, you know, just has meat on their plate or, you know, a lettuce wrapped taco. And we really did feel like we were missing out on a part of our culture that we really loved. So I don't remember exactly how it happened. I just know, you know, I knew there were certain foods that I could eat that were a little more nutrient dense that I had been playing around with to make things like breads.
Uh-huh.
And I just figured, okay, well, what if I just throw all of these ingredients together and try to make something that, you know, functions like, resembles, and tastes like a tortilla?
Well, you know what it looks like, right? So, yeah, it's like, you know, the form factor. You just have to now make it taste good. So did you try a million different times, or did it sort of come together pretty easily for you?
I think Well, I'm a perfectionist, so I feel like I'm still working on, you know, even that recipe to this day. So I always feel like it's still coming together. But the very first iteration of it was probably more like a tostada.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't very tortilla pliable-like. But it was pretty much the same ingredients that we're using today. It just took a little bit of tweaking and playing around with to get to what we have today.
So I want to come back in a minute to, you know, what you're playing around with today, but I want to focus a little at the start of on your family, because what I know about your family history, it just seems like you come from an extraordinary family, not just the immediate seven of you, but, you know, the previous generations who were in Texas before you. Can you tell us about your grandmother? I know she had a great role to play here, and it sounded like your grandfather was sort of exceptional. It doesn't surprise me that your amazing family came together to start businesses, because you've had such a history of doing interesting things in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a legacy that we're trying to live up to and carry forward. So we are a Texas-based family. Both sides of my family have been in Texas for several generations, at least. I usually consider myself a third-generation Mexican-American or Texan. But even on my dad's side, we've probably been in Texas longer than that, since they were from the border town of Laredo. And we may have been in Laredo for like 5 or 6 generations before me.
Wow.
So yeah, we do have a long history here in Texas. My great-grandparents on my mother's side came to Texas by way of Baytown from Michoacan, Mexico. And they started working in the oil refineries in the Houston Baytown area. And, you know, my grandfather was a World War II veteran, or is a World War II veteran. And he, you know, when I was in college, I had to do a family history project, and I was able to interview him about his experience in the war, and I learned a lot about, you know, the work that he had done for Mexican-American civil rights during that interview. And one of the things that always stood out to me was he had mentioned that, you know, well, he was a paratrooper, and he had mentioned that one of his duties that he recalled was, you know, he would have to walk around after, you know, there had been some sort of fight, and he would have to lift up these dead bodies to place them up against a fence to make sure that they didn't get run over by the trucks that were coming through, and that he would notice, you know, the names of, you know, these people on their name tags, on their dog tags, and it would, last names like Garza and Martinez and Lopez, they were just mostly Hispanic surnames, and that really hit him. And when he came back from the war, he felt like Mexican Americans were really treated like second-class citizens, even though, you know, a lot of them had contributed, you know, their lives to the war and to our country. So he became really involved in Mexican American civil rights, and he had some involvement in helping to change the way elections were run in the Baytown area. He tried to run for city council and for mayor and wasn't able to win the seat, and realized that a lot of it was because they were an at-large voting district as opposed to a single member. So he actually took a case to the Supreme Court and was able to change the way elections take place there. And he was really involved in improving the quality of education for Mexican Americans. He was one of the people involved in starting something called the Little School of 400, which basically was the precursor to the Head Start program that still exists today. So, my grandparents were really involved in Mexican American civil rights, and it's something that I've, at least since college, I've been aware of, and really, you know, proud to be a part of in some way.
That is, just hearing that gives me chills. That's an extraordinary family legacy, as you say. In Trump's America, how does that make you feel, and does that change how you think about every day what you're doing?
Well, I think there's just, I know that they did a lot to get us to where we are today. And so I feel like I just have to carry that forward and do everything I can to make sure that, you know, I live up to that.
You're doing amazing things with the food of, you know, your family, and changing it for the modern day, which we're going to talk about right after we come back from this break. So stay with us. You're going to hear more about the amazing tortilla chips, and other delicious foods from Siete Family Foods and how they came to be. So stay with us, listen to them commercial, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Hey, it's Dana Cowan. Welcome back to Speaking Broadly. You're listening to me talking to Veronica Garza, and we're talking about Mexican-American foods and this amazing company called Siete Family Foods. So, Veronica, we were just talking about how incredible your family is, but we were talking about your family recipes and how you developed the very first tortilla for the company that is now, I think you're in 400 Whole Foods, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So you played around with it and you got the tortilla to a pretty acceptable place for you, even though you're a perfectionist. What happened next?
What happened next? So I was really just making these tortillas for me and my family at first, so that we could continue to enjoy, you know, our beloved Mexican food and tacos. And so every weekend, my mom and I would get together in the kitchen, and at first it was just making batches of tortillas for the family to snack on throughout the week. And around the same time that, you know, we had changed our diets, we had started this family gym together. And eventually all of the members and clients of our gym found out about these tortillas that I was making.
they're like, you're holding back on us. Like, yeah. We're doing the hard work, but we're not having the fun with the tortillas.
Yeah, so they started asking for them. And so my mom and I would get in the kitchen, and we started making more and more tortillas. And, you know, I would sell them to just, you know, some of my friends and family. Well, not family, my friends at the gym. And members. And so we did that for many years. And
what kind of volume were you doing? Like, you were just doing this out of your family's kitchen? And
yeah.
I mean, did it take over? I just imagine, you know, almond flour everywhere and, you know, no time to yourself. Like, what was that like in that those years when you had developed the recipe, you were selling to gym members and any, you know, people who would ask?
Yeah, I think it basically took over our Saturdays and Sundays often. We would probably make, I think I remember doing something like 50 packs of tortillas in a day or in a weekend with my mom's help. And it was often just the two of us. We were doing it all by hand. And I think I was actually, like, taking orders. People would ask me for tortillas, and I'd tell them, okay, well, next weekend I'm going to make a bunch, and so I can sell you some the following week. So go ahead and put in your order, and I'll make sure that I set those aside for you. So, yeah, it was probably about 50 packs at a time.
Wow. And was this great bonding with your mom? Like, did she tell you stories? I mean, was this – because with five kids, it would also seem possible to me that you didn't have a ton of time alone with your mom when you were growing up.
Yeah, I think it was a really good bonding experience for us. And sometimes we were able to call in my grandma to get advice from her. She had been making flour tortillas all of her adult life, and they were probably the most delicious flour tortillas that I've ever tasted. So, you know, we would get to call her and see what she thought, and she got to try them one day and really liked them. So, yeah, it was really nice. It was often a time where my mom and I would talk about her experience growing up and making tortillas with her family, or watching, you know, my grandmother and great grandmother make tortillas. So I think I learned a lot during those times.
So then, but then you realized you had a business somehow.
Yeah, I didn't know how to start a business. I think that was the issue, but I always knew in the back of my mind there was a possibility. So people would ask me for the recipe all the time, and I knew enough not to give it out. I thought there's a possibility that one day this could be something. So I hung on to that recipe. Well, to this day, I'm hanging on to it. But people actually didn't even know what was in the tortillas other than almonds. I wouldn't tell anybody more than that, and they would still buy them. So,
so then I think your brother was the one who was just like, come on, let's make it a business, right?
Yeah, so I wanted to start a business for many years, and I do have an MBA, but starting a food business just seemed really foreign to me. And I didn't know where to start. I had a full-time job teaching at a university in Laredo. And it just seemed like a really daunting thing for me to take on. And I think it was kind of an idea that it was something I would do on my own because it was my recipe. And I could just never figure out what to do or never get the courage to do what I needed to do. So I think it was in 2013-ish, late 2013, my brother was in a position, my younger brother, he was really looking for a job. He had gotten his law degree but didn't really want to practice law in the traditional sense. So he was looking for a job, and I think he saw that he was living in Austin and saw that there were a lot of people who were, you know, really eating healthy, following these paleo-type diets, and could really benefit from having a product like this available to them in stores. So I think he was really the person that convinced me that we could do it. And then my mom also at the same time came on board saying, you know, I'll do this with you. And I think we just all decided that it was a risky thing to do, but we would feel better at least trying versus, you know, waiting, not doing anything, and seeing that somebody else came out with something similar.
That makes sense to me. And at this point, did you have your autoimmune challenges under control? Because that seemed like that had really made it difficult for you in jobs in times past, and you were really going to be launching into something that was even more stressful and more consuming than your previous positions.
Yeah, at the time, really all of my autoimmune symptoms were very much under control, you know, almost completely gone. When I would go to doctors, they were surprised that none of those markers were there anymore. And it really was just changing my diet and starting to exercise.
That is so inspiring. I hope all those listeners out there, you know, hear that. I mean, just diet and exercise, they are at the root of so much good potential. So you went to a natural co-op in, was it in Austin?
We did.
And I love the idea. You went to the co-op and you brought like a baggie that had your tortilla in it.
Yes.
And then what happened?
Yeah, so my brother, I think we decided we won't do this unless we have a customer. Otherwise, you know, why are we going to go through all the trouble of starting a business and finding a place to make the product if we have nobody to sell them to? So we literally just, with a bag, I think there was 10 tortillas in a bag, I drove them up from Laredo to Austin. We, on the spot, at the store, it's called Wheatsville Food Co-op, we asked to meet with their buyer, and he came out and chatted with us. And
you mean you didn't have an appointment or anything?
I'm sorry?
You didn't have an appointment in advance or anything?
No, we
didn't.
Oh, my
gosh.
We just showed up. it's a pretty small store. So they were pretty welcome to us doing that.
Got it.
And I think my brother made the buyer taste the tortillas right in front of us. He was going to take them to the back, and my brother said, no, I want to see your reaction.
Aww.
And let's talk about, you know, the possibilities. So he tasted them, liked them, and said, well, we'll carry them here. How soon can you have them on our shelves? So that presented a little bit of a problem because we didn't have a business. We didn't have any brand name. All I had was a recipe. we didn't even have a place to make them. So he gave us 2 months to go and get all of those things in order, and they were really helpful, actually. Kind of came up with a list of all of the things that we had to get done, and we went and did it. Me, my mom, and my brother, with the help of my dad, and my siblings, my other siblings also helped as much as they could. So it was really a family affair. We found a kitchen to rent hourly. It was a gluten-free bakery in Austin. And we started renting on weekends and making the tortillas by hand. We made our first batch and delivered them. I think it was in probably February of 2014. And then they kept asking for more.
That's just exactly the result that you'd hope. So he is, did the buyer, did he give you the list of things that you needed to do? And he helped you along, or did you just know intuitively what you needed to do to get started?
No, I think he actually gave us a list of things that we needed to do. And it was simple things like find the commercial kitchen, make sure that you're registered with the city and the health department, and become a business. So there was a little bit of, thankfully, my brother has his law degree. My father's an attorney, as well as my sister. So they had some idea about, how you go file to become an actual business. So there was some knowledge there.
And were there other mentors along the way, people who helped you learn how to, make this at scale, or how to create the business or tweak the recipes?
Yeah, in the very beginning, I leaned a lot on, I'll actually say her name here, Leah Lopez. She is the owner and founder of a local gluten-free bakery. They're actually national now. It's called Better Bites Bakery. And that's actually the kitchen that we were renting out of hourly on the weekends. So she had been doing it a couple of years, and she provided a lot of advice in the beginning.
What was the most valuable piece of advice that she or anybody gave you?
Well, so we were involved in an incubator program about a year into the business. And at the time, we were making just our almond flour tortilla. And I had a lot of recipes in mind for different products. People were asking us for things like pizza crusts, bread. And I knew it was possible that I could make all of those things. And in some of our conversations, or in one of our conversations with a mentor at that time, he told us, look, you're Mexican, make Mexican food. And it sounded really harsh at the time, but it made a lot of sense, because that was something that I was really passionate about, making and sharing with people, sharing our culture, and it allowed us to be authentic. So really it was his way of saying, be authentic. And I think that was probably the most valuable piece of advice, because it really steered us into the direction that we've moved into now, being this healthy Mexican-American food brand, and it helps us to be focused rather than trying to do everything to please everybody.
And as you've grown, you've added more tortillas and, more flavors, if you will. How did you do that R&D to expand the brand? But, of course, as you said, you stayed on point with Mexican-American foods.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's kind of a process very similar to, the very first time I made a product. I'm always just trying to solve my own problems. So when we moved into chips, it really was because I wanted to eat me and my family wanted to eat tortilla chips, and there wasn't anything out there that we could enjoy. Everything was made with corn or even rice, and we were trying to eliminate grains as much as possible. So the process is always just solving my own problem. you know, as we expand into different categories, I'm always keeping that in mind. I think that's really helpful. If I'm solving my own problem, then I'm very likely solving other people's problems too.
So I noticed on the on your site, you also sell clothes like onesies and t-shirts, and they're super cute. Who are the people in those pictures?
They are some, so I think there's some kids. Those are my nieces and nephews.
I just was like, it just felt like it must be family. It was so adorable. The kids are so cute.
Yeah, and some of the adults are a couple of our employees that have been with us from almost the very beginning.
So there's the seven family members in the business, every single one of you, which is, again, sort of extraordinary. How many people are working with you now?
Besides my family or total?
In addition to your family.
In addition to my family, I think we're at 25 or 26 today and growing pretty quickly.
And so tell me, in what direction are you growing? Wholesale accounts, you have Whole Foods is a huge part of it, but who else?
So initially we were really focused on natural. We wanted to grow out our brand in that way and really build that as our foundation. And we recently, I guess this year really, has been pushing into more conventional stores and still really focused on natural, but trying to meet people, in the grocery stores where they shop on a regular basis. So we're in a lot of conventional grocery stores now. And so growing out our distribution and then also growing out in our product pipeline. So this year we'll have more chips, more chip flavors, more tortilla flavors, I guess you can call them. Even growing out into different categories that we've never been in before.
And like what? Because I said there's cassava and coconut, which I was intrigued by.
Yeah.
And chia seeds.
That was our second product. So our first was the almond flour. Second was our cassava coconut-based tortilla. And that really came about just listening to customer feedback. I was seeing a lot of people were really interested in eating a grain-free tortilla, but couldn't eat almonds or any nuts.
Oh.
So it was our nut-free option for those people.
But you're going to be air-free soon. It's nut-free, it's gluten-free, it's free-free. Right. And so you are the co-founder and you're the chief innovation officer, which makes you in many ways, because it was your product, the spokesperson. But as we started out this interview, we talked about your shyness, and you just couldn't wait for this to be over. You're getting close. You're getting close. You're doing a really great job, but you're shy. How is it to actually, run this company and be shy? Like, what role has being shy played in, running this business?
Yeah, I am shy, and it is something that has been difficult to overcome. I think, talking to you today is kind of difficult for me, and I think a lot of it is I'm a middle child, right smack in the middle. I have an older sister, older brother, then a younger sister, younger brother, and so I'm kind of used to just blending in and going with the flow, and running this business has definitely put me in a position where I have to get out of my comfort zone on a daily basis, really. And it's, talking to you and doing things like this is just something I've decided that I have to do for our business and then also for my own personal growth. Actually, this year, I usually say no to doing things like this. And this year, I told myself, I'm going to do things and say yes to things that make me really uncomfortable because I think that's going to help me to grow as a person. So hopefully just doing it more and more often will make me more comfortable and maybe one day I'll overcome the shyness when it comes to stuff like this.
And also you'll have grown an inch by the end. But when you get off, you're like, oh my God, I'm taller. how did you force yourself to do these things you don't want to do? Because I think a lot of listeners probably find themselves, you know, there's things that they don't want to do that make them uncomfortable. And I feel like understanding that is so, so important.
Ooh, I think I do it because I know that it's, you know, going to be beneficial for the company. And
but how do you make family. Yourself do it? Like, how do you just gird yourself and you're like, it's just grit and determination? Is that it? Like, you just had that stern conversation with yourself and you're like, I'm just going to do that.
You know, sometimes there actually is, you know, I'll chat with my siblings and my parents and let them know, okay, I was asked to participate in this panel or this conference, and I really don't want to do it because I'm, you know, nervous about it. And they usually give me the confidence that I need to do the stuff, remind me that, you know, it's possible. And I'm capable of speaking about, you know, our business and my life. So I think I just get the confidence from them.
And do you find having done, because we met at South by Southwest when you were on a great panel that was hosted by Spoon University. Do you feel after an experience like that, that you're just like a tiny bit more comfortable, or do you feel that sense of it contributing to your life in a way that you'd hoped or not yet?
No, it definitely does help. I do feel like every time I force myself to get uncomfortable, I grow a little bit more.
And that
there was really a point, I remember in grad school, I couldn't stand up in front of my classmates, and there was, you know, 12 people in my class, to give a presentation without feeling like I had a frog, you know, in the back of my throat. So there's some issues with, you know, public speaking and feeling confident in front of a crowd that I think I've mostly overcome. So you do grow.
And the great thing is that in the case of your the food, you can give people, you know, these the tortillas or the chips, and they do a lot of talking for you, right? Once someone has tried that, they're like, oh my gosh, you're amazing, because this thing is incredible and it's changed my life. And, you know, there are a lot of people who deal with autoimmune disease or lupus or need to have an anti-inflammatory diet, and you're just helping all of those people. So you've already spoken so loudly with what you've put in the marketplace.
Yeah, it definitely makes, knowing that makes doing stuff like this a lot easier, knowing that, you know, I'm going to tell people about this product that we're making, and it can benefit them and change their lives the way it's changed mine.
So with that, I have one last question for you. I always ask my guests to pay it forward. A woman in the food industry who has been a mentor, who's shown you the way, I'd love to know who that person is and what they've taught you so that our listeners can learn from them too.
You're asking me who, yeah. Somebody who's been a mentor for me?
Who has been a mentor and who's helped shape your life in food and business, and just to pay it forward.
Yeah, I would actually say my grandmother was a food mentor for me. She wasn't a business person, but I think she's really shaped a lot of, you know, what I'm doing today and what our family's doing. She was a great cook. And I think she always taught me to, just watching her, I could tell that everything she made was made with love. And that's something I try to do with all of the products that I make.
And there you have it. That is this episode of Speaking Broadly. Veronica, thank you for getting out of your comfort zone for me and for all of the listeners who are going to be inspired by the way in which you dealt with that illness early on, that you got it under control, that you're giving people delicious foods that can help them live better. And I can't wait to see how you and your company grow. If people want to follow you either on social media or how do they find you?
Yeah, so we are, I think, at Siete Foods on Instagram and on Facebook. And, yeah, please follow along. We have a lot of fun You can watch some of our Instagram stories and see all of the stuff that we're doing here.
And all of the really great food that you eat, because as you say, like a tortilla alone, I mean, that might be a snack, but you guys eat really well.
Try to, yeah.
The big barbecues, and you have a lot of fun with food. And you know where to find me, Dana Cowan. You can find me at FW Scout on Instagram and Twitter. I want to thank David Tatasciore, the amazing engineer, and Carlin Thompson, my wing lady, for a great season, because, folks, hard to believe, but this wraps up the season of Speaking Broadly, and we'll see you next season. Have a great beginning of spring.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.